And today I'm delighted to introduce a new segment on the Radio Cafe. We're doing a segment about books with Marina La Palma. Over her long career, she's been a poet, performance artist, art critic, social observer, and above all, a reader, and has a reading list that is just unbelievable. Welcome, Marina.
Thank you.
So, however often we do it, you will be talking about an author whom you found and who you will be introducing to our listeners.
Yes.
I have to say, I was looking at your website, marinalapalma.com, and you have been keeping a list of every book you've read since you were in high school.
I think before that, the ones I have are from about the late 60s, early 70s. But I know I did it as a child. I was fortunate enough in part of my childhood to live in Hollywood, my later childhood, 10, 11, 12. And at the time, there were all these sleepy little dusty bookstores that were totally happy to have a little 12-year-old kid come in and go, "Ooh, who's Paramahansa Yogananda? Does that have to do with yogurt?" And so I could borrow books from them. There were two or three little bookstores long since vanished that would actually loan me books on Amelia Earhart or whatever I was interested in. And I do remember I used to write down what I had read. And then once you've done something long enough, you just sort of go, gee, I'll keep doing this.
And so your reading has been so wide-ranging. Do you see, as you look at your lists, any patterns?
I can see patterns looking back. If I look at a particular year and say, oh, that was the year I was fascinated with Hopis and Navajos, or certain branches of sociology or periods of history. So there are themes that continue over the years, or certain authors that I discover and then keep reading. And that's part of why I like to share it. You know, it's sort of this amazing discovery of a body of knowledge that enriches everything so much.
Now, how much of your reading tends to be fiction?
That also varies. For instance, when traveling, I will tend to take more fiction because, as we were talking about earlier, I'll jettison paperbacks if I'm on an international trip. But nonfiction books I tend to keep because I've underlined. So it varies, and I go through phases where I'll read a lot of political nonfiction or historical stuff. But, you know, fiction is more pleasurable and fun and...
Usually
it should be. There are difficult fictions, but I like things that are somewhat difficult. And also, unfortunately, I tend to go look for obscure things, which is part of an issue with doing this kind of program, would be that I can say, there is this amazing book by this woman in the 20s, but you'll never find it.
Yeah, that's one of our rules. We talked about this before we decided to do this segment, is that you're not allowed to do a segment on anybody that our listeners will never be able to find.
So I could check the library first. A lot of things are available in this. Santa Fe's library system is actually pretty good.
Yes, indeed it is. Shout out to Pat Hodapp, our wonderful director of libraries here in this city.
And you can get academic books also. I guess they have an inter-college library agreement or something.
Now, so much of your life has been involved in literature, poetry, performance, music, working in bookstores, working for literary presses.
Yes.
So how does it all fit together for you? Does each part of your life kind of inform the other parts?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no separation. In fact, because of early exposure to the technology that is now the internet, I was forced to take into account that this division between the humanities and the sciences is kind of an artifact of our society. And I was married to someone who was very much straddling those things for 25 years. So we were reading things like René Thom and catastrophe theory in the 70s. And then he was applying it using little 1K of memory computers that he built himself. to model imaginary societies and things that Santa Fe Institute today is doing with highly powerful
bigger computers, yes,
to model the behavior of a system and where does it go if you let it run given these parameters. So I don't have the technical mathematical background I'd like to have, but as my high school teacher sister, what was her name? My math teacher was wonderful in high school because she loved math. And I was A-plus student in everything except really struggling to get a B in algebra and geometry. And she said, but I notice you can use your linguistic skills to talk yourself through an equation. And that's kind of how I can approach, like listening to a lecture at Santa Fe Institute where the person has all these equations up there. But if they're a good communicator, I can understand what they're describing in another way.
And so your husband would be using the catastrophe theory information in one way and you'd be using it more in a literary sense?
Yes. There was a program that was written about in Scientific American in the late 70s, early 80s that could take all the Shakespeare texts and then do an analysis of the occurrence of words and spit out a Shakespeare-like new text. And so I did some poetry in that way, a Marina-like text, given my use of language and how frequently I used certain words.
And you wrote a program that simulated you?
Yeah. He did the coding, and it spewed out some more of me.
Did it sound like you?
Yeah, more or less, you know. He did a piece called The Party Planner, which was based on what everyone intuitively understands. There's a party and there's 30 people there, and person A, 26 people say, person A really likes person F and wants to be close to them, and they really hate person W and want to be far from them. And then you put them on a chessboard, XY grid, and watch their movement. And then you throw in, where's the food? They also want to be close to the food. So what kind of pattern are they going to make? You know, so they're instantiations of these abstract ideas that at the time it was avant-garde art. Now it's big data science.
So your segment that we're going to do here in the Radio Cafe is called sort of randomly Booked Up.
Booked Up.
Booked Up. So what are you going to, what's your thought? Each time you will introduce an author to us?
Well, this first one that we're doing is an author that I think people should know about. I just discovered him, Stuart Kaminsky, and my husband's read almost all his books, and the beauty of it is that he's got 50 plus books, just mystery detective series. And that's, you know, wonderful, because they're in the library. It's very accessible reading, but it's quite profound also.
Now, when you discover an author, and I have to say, over the course of my life, when I discover an author I love, I will read one or two books, and then I feel like I got it, and I move on. And if I try to read three or four or five or the person's entire literary output, I get bored. I think you're the other kind of person who wants to really read the whole thing.
Get the whole picture. There was a period, it was probably back in the 80s, I read a book by Iris Murdoch, and it was, you know, mind-bogglingly good. So then I started reading more and more of her books, and you could then say there's a pattern, there's a certain type of character, there's a certain type of event, there's a sort of formula, but she's so good that that's almost irrelevant. So if you get a great writer, even though in a sense everyone writes the same story over and over, every songwriter writes the same song over and over.
You think so? People say that, but every time I read a new book or see a new movie that's amazing, I can't think, oh, this is the same thing over and over. It seems so new and fresh and amazing.
Yeah, well, I had just enough literary criticism background to know that you can take a body of work by a filmmaker or an author and do an analysis where you say, well, in 90% of this person's work, there's a character who's just lost a loved one, and if they're good, it doesn't matter. That's just literary analysis. You may or may not want to do it. Some people will say, don't tell me that, you'll spoil it. But to go back to your question about, you know, what kind of books I might want to review after this, I think my instinct is to go for diversity, even though I've just said that we all, you know, follow very predictable patterns. And, for example, then do a writer that's a woman instead of a man, that's not a mystery writer. And then in terms of just the reading lists that you mentioned, I post them on Facebook sometimes, and once a year I try to update my website. So it's, here's everything I read last year, books, that not counting magazines and online newsletters, etc. I lived in New York City at one time and used to use the local video store when those things existed.
The New York City video stores were amazing.
And yeah, and I was in Chelsea, and one day I started noticing that every time I got a receipt, it was somebody else's, and it listed all the movies that you've rented, and the one I was getting was John Ashbery's Video Rental History.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't save it, but, you know, there's a book by Richard Castellan. It's called Autobiographies, and it's a bunch of different approaches to how do you tell the story of your own life, and one section is just all the books I've read, and it says something about you if someone can read it in the right way. So we'll see what I pick next. I'm going to think deeply about something that people can find and that is just like, maybe you don't know this author. This is really fun, you know?
And maybe we'll have some anthropology and things like that as well.
Yes, absolutely. That would be good, a nonfiction.
So Marina La Palma is at marinalapalma.com, and we are now going to go to our new segment with Marina called Booked Up. Thank you so much, and we really look forward to this and future segments.
Thank you. For a hardcore reader like me, it's fun to discover a new writer and find that this author has about 50 other books for me to read. My new find is Stuart M. Kaminsky, and he's a prolific producer of detective mysteries. Like all good novels, Kaminsky's are about relationships and the complexity of the world. I started with his series based around Lou Fonesca, an Italian-American court investigator from Chicago, who finds himself in Sarasota, Florida, nursing his depression over the hit-and-run death of his district attorney wife. Always Say Goodbye is the title. Above all, it's about loss. The main plot strand is Lou's return to Chicago after 4 years of being invisible. Because there's a lead about who killed his wife and what it might have had to do with the case she had been working on prior to her death. In Sarasota, where he inhabits a dingy room behind a Dairy Queen, Fonesca has an 87-year-old psychiatrist who sees him mainly because he's an interesting case. She charges little more than a cappuccino and 2 biscotti for a session. But she also requires that he bring her, along with the cookies, a joke each time. Fonesca never laughs, and when he hits up whomever he crosses paths with for a joke, it's always an incongruous and revealing moment. The Fonesca stories are full of everyday detail, punctuated by bursts of unexpected, often violent action. There are good people and bad people, right things and wrong. But as in the real world, the innocent do not always triumph. The evil sometimes goes unpunished, and things are not always what they seem. Kaminsky gives us brilliant glimpses into the workings of a variety of minds, from small-town couldn't-care-less cops to big-city cynical prosecutors, psychotic millionaires and their hapless offspring, from a pair of low-voltage homicidal twins in the rural South to an elderly Holocaust survivor in her posh Chicago apartment. Even minor characters like Lou's sister and loyal tow truck driver brother-in-law are fully present. Populating the stories with real people is a special skill of Kaminsky's, partly through his plot-propelling dialogue, peppered with bits of idiosyncratic American speech that just make me laugh out loud. Lou is the postmodern antihero in a baseball cap, a self-declared pessimist and loner who doesn't want to own a car or anything beyond a change of clothes. But, as with most of us, his vision of himself is somewhat delusional. He actually has a sort of crew, a coterie of helpers, capital H, like the hero in a folk tale or a fairy tale, who are always there when he needs them. Needless to say, each one is an idiosyncratic character, with a full backstory sketched out in a few words, for whom Lou once performed some act of kindness, small or large. There's also a lot of food and eating in his stories. Not just the biscotti, but candy bars in the glove compartment of the tow truck, the super delicious baked delights of a Greek matriarch, also homicidal, discussions over donuts, luscious hamburger dinners interrupted by suspects climbing out windows. I can't wait to read some of the Lieberman mysteries, in which someone's brother owns a deli, and that someone's wife doesn't want him eating between meals. The eating indicates a lingering love of life in the supposedly numb Finesca. In scenes with his family, it speaks of old bonds that are submerged but not cut. In Murder on the Trans-Siberian Express, the dinners of commissars and convicts alike are detailed in their full Russian glory or pathos. Kaminsky has written four detective series. There are over a dozen of the wonderful Porfiry Rosnikov novels set in the Kafkaesque world of post-Soviet Moscow, centered on a one-legged detective who more than compensates for his missing leg with empathy and brain power. The Toby Peters Mysteries consists of 24 books, and there are 8 Abe Lieberman Mysteries. The Lou Finesca Mysteries series ended only with Kaminsky's death in 2009. Kaminsky has also published other novels, books on cinema, biographies of actors like Gary Cooper, Clint Eastwood, and has written screenplays for movies and television shows such as CSI. The mystery detective genre novel rests on what Joyce Carol Oates calls a tacit contract between the author and the reader. While we'll encounter terrible transgressions in such books, they are in the end resolved, and we can take comfort in that resolution. Meanwhile, the story disengages us from our own problems by engaging us in a kind of puzzle. You've probably noticed that in Santa Fe's public library system, the mystery detective genre is now incorporated into general fiction. This may be just a database efficiency decision, but it also suggests a philosophy about literature that does not divide it into discrete genres of higher and lower status. And I applaud that. It does mean, however, that if you want a mystery novel, you have to have a title or author to look for, which makes my discovery all the more valuable for you. If you read one of Kaminsky's books and enjoy it, you are in luck.
And that was Marina La Palma, and she'll be doing the segment Booked Up on a regular basis here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.